the home is the most sacrosanct of places. And actually, we don't think that the home stops at the door. We think that there are some areas, like the porch and like the driveway or whatever, and we can argue about exactly what those areas are, but there are some areas which are just as sacrosanct as your living room. That's what I take Jardines to say. And in that case, I think you lose here.
And they did. Welcome to Broadcast Blue.
Bringing you the latest case law updates on the legal aspects of law enforcement. This is Broadcast Blue.
In this episode of Broadcast Blue, I'm going to talk about the case that was recently released by the United States Supreme Court, Collins versus Virginia. Now, this is a very important case, and we've been waiting for this opinion to come out for some time. I'm your host, Bruce Allen Barnard, and I'm going to talk about this case, Collins versus Virginia. But before I do, I want to give you a little bit of a backdrop to this and why it was so interesting and why I've been personally been waiting for this decision to come out. I want to take you back to March of 2016. You're probably wondering to yourself, self, why are we going to go back 2 years? And I want to point out a case to you, United States versus Bean. I did a webinar on this on Bruce's Brown Bag Wednesday webinars back when I was a senior instructor in the legal division at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center there in beautiful downtown Glencoe, Georgia. There was a case that was very interesting, and I selected it for the case of the week, and it was United States versus Ricky Nicky Bean. Kind of hard to forget that name. Kind of sounds like a Rudyard Kipling novel there, Ricky Ticky Tavi or something, but Ricky Nicky Bean. And I'm not going to go into all the facts on that case and to get into the details of that Fifth Circuit decision, which isn't even referenced in the Collins versus Virginia case. But I want to point out to you that in that particular case in the Fifth Circuit, there was a person who pulled their car in on a into a driveway, and they were not in the curtilage, but they were on a driveway on residential property. And they had a reasonable suspicion to do a Terry stop of this person as a result of some reports of gunshots fired. And so he pulls into this driveway. The police officers pull in. They block him in. He's just a few feet off the street. And so the car is not in the curtilage. That's the key to this case, United States versus Bean. The car is not on the curtilage. They call a dog in. And the dog comes in, and the canine goes around the car. It's a drug canine, and it alerts on the car. And once they had probable cause that there were drugs in the car as a result of the canine alert, they went into the car and searched it under the mobile conveyance doctrine. Now, very interestingly, the Fifth Circuit said that the search of the car with the sniff, when the dogs went into the driveway to sniff the car, that was okay under the Fourth Amendment. That was not a search under the Fourth Amendment because they were not in the curtilage. They were in open fields. Well, you're either in curtilage or open fields, one or the other, right, when you're on residential property. Since the proximity, it wasn't close to the house. It was in the driveway but close to the street, not close to the house. The court said it was okay to have the dog sniff the car to establish probable cause. But the court said it was not okay to apply the mobile conveyance doctrine in the residential driveway. The court in the Fifth Circuit ruled that the mobile conveyance doctrine did not apply in the driveway of a residence. And they limited the use of the mobile conveyance doctrine. And I always thought that's a fascinating concept because basically you're saying it's okay to physically invade that space, but not to apply the mobile conveyance doctrine. And it would have been interesting to see facts like that go up on appeal. But what we have in the case before us with the Supreme Court decision is Collins versus Virginia. And the facts are very much different, but we have some similarities in that we have the application of the mobile conveyance doctrine, otherwise known as the Carroll Doctrine, or as the court refers to it, the automobile exception, being applied on residential property. Okay, before I get into the facts in the Collins versus Virginia case, I want to give you a refresher on some fundamental legal concepts, and it's going to be regarding the judicially recognized exceptions, what I refer to as JREs when I'm conducting my training, just to abbreviate it. So if you ever hear me talk about a JRE, you know I'm talking about a judicially recognized exception. And basically, the whole concept, just a quick little refresher, all government searches and seizures must be reasonable. Fundamentally, you strip it away. That's what the Fourth Amendment says. Government searches and seizures must be reasonableness. And reasonableness requires either a warrant or a judicially recognized exception. So it's possible that you can have warrantless searches and seizures that take place that are reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. Of course, the first question is going to be, is it even a search or a seizure under the Fourth Amendment? Because if it's not a search or seizure under the Fourth Amendment, then it doesn't have to be reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. So it's very important from the beginning to determine whether or not the Fourth Amendment is even applicable to a particular type of action or activity that's taken place. So once we've got this concept down of what the fundamentals are of the Fourth Amendment, now we need to look at a couple of specific judicially recognized exceptions. There's a whole bunch of them, and if you listen to the Broadcast Blue podcast fairly frequently, you're already familiar with a number of them. But let me talk to you about two that are particularly important, two concepts. First, the judicially recognized exception that's going to be very important in the discussion with Collins versus Virginia is the concept of the automobile exception. Now, that's created back in the Prohibition era, the Carroll Doctrine, as it was referred to, the original Carroll case that came out of Supreme Court back in the late 1920s. And the whole concept was that there was some type of exigency that existed with an automobile, and that when you had an automobile and you had probable cause that there was evidence of criminal activity or contraband, as it was back in the 1920s, it was booze. In that Oldsmobile Roadster back then, that particular case, in the Carroll case. So they had the liquor, if you recall, that was hidden in the upholstery. Well, the officer in the Carroll decision, the officer had probable cause that this person was running illegal booze in this Oldsmobile Roadster, but he didn't have a warrant. But he said to himself, "Self, if I go to get a warrant and come back, this car is not going to be here. And so I'm going to go ahead and search it without a warrant, with probable cause, but without a warrant." And basically, fundamentally, what the Supreme Court said back then was, hey, look, he's right. You know, if he goes to get a warrant and comes back, the car's going to be gone. And so this mobile conveyance or automobile exception, as it's called by some people, or the Carroll Doctrine, as it's called by others, it's all the same thing. No matter which of those names you hear, you're talking about an automobile with either evidence of criminal activity or some kind of contraband in it. And the whole concept is that you don't have time to get a warrant. And that's the way it started in 1928. Well, it kind of morphed over time, and the exigency went away from it, and it got to the point to where it didn't really matter whether or not you had time to get a warrant. But suffice it for our purposes to say that the mobile conveyance doctrine kind of morphed over time, and the exigency part of it went away. So where it didn't really matter whether or not you had time to get a warrant. You didn't have to show in order to fulfill the requirements of this judicially recognized exception or this JRE, you did not have to show that you actually had the time to get a warrant. All you had to show was that you had probable cause, that there was contraband or evidence of criminal activity in a mobile conveyance, and it had to be truly mobile. You couldn't get jiggy with it and play around with the, you know, if you got an automobile that's up on blocks with no wheels on it and the engine's been removed and it's got grass standing 3 or 4 feet high around it, obviously it's not very mobile, and so the mobile conveyance doctrine wouldn't really be that, wouldn't be applicable in that particular type of situation. So it had to be truly mobile, and you had to have probable cause that there was evidence or contraband inside the vehicle, and that's all you had to show. And so that's the way the whole concept of the automobile exception evolved to the point to where we're at in the Collins versus Virginia case. Another important concept that I need to mention to you is the concept of curtilage. And if you're not familiar with curtilage, curtilage is a concept that it's a judicially created concept. It's developed as a matter of law. There's no statute that determined it. establishes where cartilage is in any particular area, but the concept of cartilage is fairly straightforward. You know, we're not prisoners in our homes. Most of us, unless you're wearing some type of ankle bracelet, we're not prisoners in our homes. We have areas outside of our homes that we extend the pleasure and the intimate connection we have with the activities that we do within our home. You know, a man's home is his castle. It's this whole concept that our home is important, and we have areas outside of our home that are just as important. And now some more than others, right, depending on where you live. I live where I have my house in Maine. I have a big back porch, a big back patio area, and when the weather's nice, especially this time of year, you know, we get out and we do some barbecues and we have some fun and do some stuff in the backyard. And it's fenced in, and I have a fire pit, and I have some chairs, and the big patio, and the barbecue, and there's a whole lot of stuff going on outside of the house. Well, that is the concept of cartilage. I also have a big front porch where we spend time, you know, and you can sit on the porch and look across the Bay of Fundy and just enjoy the view. That is also fits within the concept of cartilage. So cartilage is a concept where the law recognizes that we're not prisoners in our homes. We extend the joy of living in our home outside of the home into these areas, these outdoor areas that are classified as cartilage. Now, so this concept of cartilage is very important for Fourth Amendment purposes for one very, very important reason, and that is because if you're in the cartilage, you're in the home. The court gives the same degree of protection to the cartilage as it would to an area that's inside the home. So if you are standing on my front porch, if you're a law enforcement officer and you come onto my front porch and you're standing on my front porch, or you come into my backyard and you're standing on my rear deck, or you go have a seat by my fire pit, you are physically intruding on my home for the purposes of the Fourth Amendment. Remember the four specific areas that are protected by name in the Fourth Amendment: persons, houses, papers, and effects. Well, houses are dwellings. Dwellings are homes. And the cartilage is a part of that home. And you might recall back in the January of 2012, we had a very famous decision that came out, United States versus Jones. Very significant decision. One of those once-in-a-career Fourth Amendment decisions, I think. They come out every once in a while. They're incredibly significant. You know, Katz came out back in 1967. That was a huge case, Katz versus United States, and that had a huge impact on Fourth Amendment jurisprudence. But the Jones case back in January of 2012 also had that kind of huge impact and that huge effect. And just to refresh your recollection on the Jones case, fundamentally, in breaking it down into simple components for you, in Justice Scalia's opinion, which became the majority opinion in that case and became the rule of law, basically what he said was, hey, look, Katz expanded the areas that are protected under the Fourth Amendment, what constitutes a search under the Fourth Amendment. There was an expansion of that under Katz, but Katz can't undo what's in the plain language of the Fourth Amendment. And you have these four constitutionally protected areas: persons, houses, papers, and effects. So if the government physically intrudes on one of those four enumerated areas, as he referred to them, if the government physically intrudes on a person, a house, a paper, or effect for the purpose of gathering information, it's a search under the Fourth Amendment. Well, why is that so important? It's important because that means that if the Fourth Amendment's applicable, if that's a search under the Fourth Amendment, it has to be reasonable under the Fourth Amendment, which means you need either a warrant or a judicially recognized exception. The cartilage is the same as being in the home. So if you physically intrude, the government physically intrudes upon the cartilage for the purpose of gathering information, it needs either a warrant or a judicially recognized exception. And there are several JREs, judicially recognized exceptions, that might allow you to intrude upon the cartilage without a warrant. One of them might be some type of exigent circumstance. You might have the destruction of evidence exigency or the emergency exigency or even hot pursuit exigent circumstances. There also might be a situation where you're attempting to have a consensual encounter at the place where a person and the place and the time where a person would normally expect to receive an uninvited guest. And if you recognize that, that is the definition of what's required for the knock and talk exception, what they sometimes refer to as an implied license to enter. It doesn't mean it's not a search when you do it. It just means that you have this judicially recognized exception that makes it okay. And there are requirements for the knock and talk exception and what when it is that applies and when it doesn't. But in the absence of a judicially recognized exception and without a warrant, if the government physically intrudes into the home, which includes the curtilage, for the purposes of gathering information, then it's going to be a search under the Fourth Amendment. And without a JRE, it will be unreasonable and will be a violation of the Fourth Amendment. Okay, so now 16 and a half minutes into this podcast, we're finally getting, with that as a background, which is incredibly important to help you understand exactly what the court said and to help you understand what you heard in the very opening of this podcast. That was actually Justice Kagan that you heard in the very beginning. So let's look at the facts in Collins versus Virginia and talk about and apply the law that I've explained to you so far. So in Collins versus Virginia, you have a situation where police officers see an individual. He's wearing a helmet, so they can't see his face and they can't make out any of his features, so they can't identify him personally. But they see this person and he's on a motorcycle, and this motorcycle is orange and black, but he's got an extended frame on the back of this motorcycle, and it's orange and black. And so it's unique in a way. Now, you don't see them all the time. You wouldn't see two of these typically in any one shift anyway. So this person wearing a helmet on this motorcycle, as I've described it, commits a traffic infraction. And one of the officers up there, and it's in Charlottesville, Virginia, Albemarle County, officer sees this person. He's on this motorcycle. He commits a traffic infraction. He goes to pull him over, and poof, the guy outruns. The guy eludes him. He gets away. And so the officers can't catch him. It's not too much longer after that, a different officer sees a motorcycle with the same description, a person wearing a helmet, and they commit another traffic infraction. They go after him, and he eludes them again. So now twice a person on an orange and black motorcycle with an extended frame has eluded them. So the officers conduct investigation, and they find out that there was a motorcycle that was stolen that fits that description, and this is likely the motorcycle that was stolen. And they also learn that it's likely in the possession of the defendant in this case, Ryan Collins, and they see his Facebook profile. You know, social media gets so many people in trouble these days because of what they put up there. People put all kinds of stuff up on their social media, and Ryan Collins wasn't any different. He puts up photographs of this motorcycle, and it's parked at his girlfriend's house where he lives several days a week. He actually puts photographs of it in the driveway, and the orange and black motorcycle parked at the top of the driveway to the house. So Officer Rhodes, one of the two officers that were involved in this case, he tracked down the address of the house. He drove over there, and he parked on the street. From the position that he was parked in on the street, Officer Rhodes saw a motorcycle, and it appeared to have an extended frame, but it was covered with a white tarp, so he couldn't tell whether or not it was orange and black and whether or not what the license plate was and what the VIN was. He couldn't tell any identification information from that particular point, but it was parked at the same angle in the exact same location in the driveway as it was in the Facebook photograph that was posted on the Facebook page of Ryan Collins. And so he sees this motorcycle sitting there. He goes up, he walks up the driveway, gets out of his car. He doesn't have a warrant. He gets out of his car. He walks up the driveway towards the house. He goes all the way up the driveway. The driveway extends past the corner of the house. If you're actually watching the video of this podcast, instead of just the podcast, there's that we actually have videos of a lot of these where we have photographs and images and other types of things on our Broadcast Blue Vimeo channel. If you're looking at the video and you're watching the video right now, you will actually see a photograph from the case, a photograph of the motorcycle with the cover on it up the driveway. And the important thing that you notice here, and what I want to make apparent for those who are listening on the podcast and don't see the image, is like most driveways, this one extends beyond the front of the house down the left side of the house. And so there's a point to where if you walk up to the driveway, you're going to turn right onto a sidewalk and go over to the front of the house and up to the front door. Beyond that, you're in the parking area of the driveway that's beyond the front of the house. It's actually on the side of the house. And this motorcycle was parked all the way up at the top of the driveway beside the house. And so he walks all the way up the driveway. He goes to the top of the driveway where the motorcycle's parked. He takes some pictures of it with the tarp on. And then in order to investigate further, as he says, Officer Rhodes pulled off the tarp, revealing a motorcycle that it matched the description. It was orange and black. It had the extended frame. It looked like the one from the speeding incidents. Now that he's got the tarp off, he can see the license plates, and he ran the license plate, and he also could see the VIN, and he ran the VIN, the vehicle identification number. And when he did this, it confirmed that this motorcycle was indeed stolen. So he gathers all this information, takes some pictures of it uncovered as well, puts the tarp back on, walks down the driveway, leaves the property, goes back to his car, and sits there and waits for Collins to show up. And Collins did. Collins comes home. Officer Rhodes walked up to the front door of the house and knocked. Collins answers the door. He agrees to speak with the officer, and he admitted that the motorcycle was his and that he had bought it without a title. And so Officer Rhodes arrested him right then and there, conducted a warrantless arrest. So Collins, he's indicted eventually by a Virginia grand jury for receiving stolen property. And through his defense attorney, he files a motion to suppress the evidence that Officer Rhodes had obtained as a result of the warrantless search. Without that warrantless search, he went up there, he pulled the tarp off. Without pulling the tarp off, he wouldn't have been able to run the VIN, he wouldn't have been able to run the license plate, and he wouldn't have been able to determine whether this one exactly matched the description at that point. So it one thing led to another. This is what I refer to as the Fourth Amendment dominoes. Fourth Amendment decisions, typically a series of Fourth Amendment decisions that have to line up, and they have to be right. Every single one of them has to be right, so you don't end up the rest of the downstream dominoes being bad. So he's trying to make an argument that there was a bad Fourth Amendment decision that led to all the others, a Fourth Amendment violation that led to the discovery of the information, and he wants to have this suppressed. And he specifically argues that Officer Rhodes, they use the term trespass, they physically intruded upon the curtilage. And that physical intrusion upon the curtilage, remember United States versus Jones, when you physically intrude upon the curtilage, it is a search under the Fourth Amendment, which means you have to have a warrant or a judicially recognized exception. And that's the argument. The district court denied the motion to suppress. The Court of Appeals of Virginia affirmed that denial of the motion to suppress. The Court of Appeals had assumed that the motorcycle was parked in the curtilage, but they held that he had probable cause to believe the motorcycle was the same one. They said that there were exigent circumstances that warranted him going up there. So that's what the Court of Appeals said. The Supreme Court of Virginia affirmed, but they did it on different grounds. They didn't say that there were exigent circumstances. They said that the case was most properly resolved with the reference to the Fourth Amendment automobile exception. And so what the Supreme Court of Virginia said was the fact that they had the ability to search the car without a warrant under the automobile exception gave them the ability to go into the curtilage in order to conduct that search, that the mobile conveyance doctrine, JRE, categorically gave them permission to go anywhere where the car was in order to search it without a warrant. And so those are the cases that led up to the Supreme Court decision. So now it's going to go to the Supreme Court. the Supreme Court now is confronted. They're confronted with two different, what they referred to as an intersection of two components of the court's Fourth Amendment jurisprudence, the automobile exception to the warrant requirement and the protection extended to the curtilage of the home. Basically, what the Supreme Court has to decide here is whether or not the automobile exception from Carroll, the Carroll case back in 1925, whether or not the automobile exception alone will allow law enforcement officers to go into the curtilage, the driveway curtilage area of the house, in order to conduct a search under the automobile exception. Does the automobile exception itself give you the ability to make a warrantless entry into the curtilage? Fundamentally, that's what the court has to answer here. So the court first spends some time explaining the Carroll Doctrine and going through the progeny of cases, very important cases, to get to the concept of the fact that when the justifications for the automobile exception come into play, officers may search an automobile without having obtained a warrant as long as they have probable cause. They develop the automobile exception, and they go into the concept of the curtilage and talk about, you know, when it comes to the Fourth Amendment, the home is the first among equals, citing the Florida versus Jardines decision from 2013. They start talking about the concept of how important curtilage is. And Jardines, the Florida versus Jardines case, came out a year after Jones. It actually cited Jones, and Jones isn't cited at all in this particular decision, but they have Jardines, which was based on that Jones concept, that physical intrusion into the curtilage for the purpose of gathering information. And the concept of whether or not the curtilage was given that same degree of protection. So the court develops the concept of curtilage, that the court considers curtilage the area immediately surrounding and associated with the home to be a part of the home itself for Fourth Amendment purposes. It's like I tell my students, you know, if you're in the curtilage, what's the significance of that under the Fourth Amendment? Well, if you're standing in the curtilage, you might as well be standing in someone's living room, because in the eyes of the Fourth Amendment, they're one and the same. You're in the home. It's a constitutionally protected area. And remember, when it comes to the Fourth Amendment, the home is the first among equals. It's almost sacrosanct. In fact, you hear that term used a lot when you're talking about government searches of people's houses. You hear that word sacrosanct over and over and over, and you hear it in this decision too. It's actually in the written opinion, and the whole concept of how important it is to be in the home. So the protection afforded to the curtilage is essentially a protection of families and privacy in an area immediately and intimately linked to the home. The court said, when a law enforcement officer physically intrudes on the curtilage to gather evidence, it's a search within the meaning of the Fourth Amendment. They cite Jardines, but Jardines, that whole concept comes straight from U.S. v. Jones. So that's very important. So it's presumptively unreasonable without a warrant, and you have to look for a judicially recognized exception. So they set out the two conflicts. I gave you a historical background on that before we started. So now we come into this question. Well, the first thing they have to decide is this area in the driveway, is it curtilage? Are they in the curtilage? Because if they're not in the curtilage, then they're in open fields, and it's a whole different question. Now, if they're in the curtilage, it's treated as if they were in the house. And the court had very little difficulty determining that this enclosed area, the driveway enclosure, because it was walled off on two sides, where Officer Rhodes searched the motorcycle, was an area adjacent to the home to which the activity of the home life extends, which is the very definition of the curtilage. And so this was almost a no-brainer. They determined it was curtilage without Dunn, and I don't think the government argued that it wasn't curtilage. And they didn't even have to apply the Dunn factors. You know, the Dunn factors are really helpful to determine whether or not a particular area is cartilage when it's not quite so obvious. In fact, in the Dunn case itself, it was a barn that was 100 feet or so away from a main house, whether there could be cartilage around a barn. But in this particular case, they didn't even have to apply the Dunn factors, and that's not uncommon. Sometimes you have these cartilage cases where they don't have to even look at Dunn. It's so obvious. You know, some areas are so intimately tied to the house that it's going to be cartilage without even having much of a consideration. The proximity and the use is going to be so obvious that it's cartilage that they easily make that determination. So they did. The court determined that the area in question was cartilage without making any reference whatsoever to the United States versus Dunn four factors. Now they're confronted with this the ultimate question. And that ultimate question is, does the scope of the automobile exception extend beyond the automobile itself? Now, if you have probable cause that there's evidence in the car and the containers, there's a container in the car, then the automobile exception would extend to a container within the car, but would it extend to a container outside of the car? In other words, what if the car is in a container? What if the car is in an area and you want to get into the area in order to get to the car, which is different than getting into the car in order to get to a container, which is fundamentally what the state of Virginia argued, that this categorical exception would allow them to get into the cartilage. But the court said no. And the reason is that the scope of the automobile exception extends no further than the automobile itself. They draw an analogy here. They say, what if the motorcycle was parked inside the living room of the house, visible through a window to a passerby on the street? Imagine that an officer has probable cause to believe the motorcycle was involved in a traffic infraction. Can the officer, acting without a warrant, enter the house to search the motorcycle and confirm whether it's the right one? And they said, surely not. And so what they're saying here is basically what I've been saying for years, you know, and it's what I said to you earlier and the way I train my students. If you're standing in the cartilage, you're standing in the house. That's exactly what the court is saying here. The court goes on to decline the extension or to expand the scope of any other exceptions, any other JREs that would allow for that. And the plain view doctrine, the concept of plain view seizures from Horton versus California, there's three things that are required in order to do a warrantless seizure of something. You have to have lawful observation, lawful access, and immediately recognizable as contraband or evidence. So you have to have lawful access. That's one of the three requirements in order to exercise that. And the court says, we're not going to expand the scope of plain view seizures to justify this. And they talk about, you know, searching a vehicle parked in the cartilage involves not only the invasion of the Fourth Amendment interest in the vehicle, but also an invasion of the sanctity of the cartilage. When talking about the automobile exception and its limitations, it says, indeed, its name alone should make all this clear enough. It is, after all, an exception for automobiles. The court said the ability to observe inside the cartilage from a lawful vantage point is not the same as the right to enter the cartilage without a warrant for the purpose of conducting a search to obtain information not otherwise accessible. So concluding that the automobile exception did not authorize the warrantless entry into the cartilage, the court concluded that the automobile exception does not permit an officer without a warrant to enter a home or its cartilage in order to search a vehicle therein. They said, we leave for resolution on remand whether Officer Rhodes' warrantless intrusion on the cartilage of Collins' house may have been reasonable on a different basis, such as exigent circumstances exception to the warrant requirement. So the Supreme Court of Virginia judgment was reversed and it was remanded for further proceedings. Remember, the appellate court in Virginia has said there were exigent circumstances, but the Supreme Court of Virginia said it was okay, but based it on the automobile exception. So now it's back on remand to determine whether or not there were any exigent circumstances that would allow for them to invade the cartilage, to physically intrude the cartilage for the purpose of gathering information, which is a search. So it's a very significant decision, not very surprising. Justice Thomas's concurring opinion is absolutely fascinating. It's a great read especially for us lawyers. It's a very good history on the application of the exclusionary rule. So to the extent you're interested in understanding the concept and the history of that judicially created remedy, the exclusionary rule from way back in the Weeks decision, then I would encourage you to read Justice Thomas's concurring opinion, which is mostly academic in that regard. He agrees with the majority opinion, so his opinion becomes a concurring opinion. There was, however, one lone dissenting opinion, so it wasn't a unanimous decision. Justice Alito dissented to the decision. He said what the police did in this case was entirely reasonable, and he says the court's decision is not very surprising, though, and if you read through his opinion, if you have studied at length, if you have read the Jones decision and looked at the United States versus Jones decision and read Justice Alito's concurring opinion, he did not agree with the concepts of resurrecting this physical intrusion definition of a search. He reached the same conclusion, but on totally different reasons in the Jones decision. What I'm saying here is he's not a big fan of the Jones search. He did not agree with it in the United States versus Jones itself. And so to the extent that this entire case is based on the concepts of Jones as reinforced in the Jardines decision, and since that's a case that he was on the other side, he did not agree with the rationale in the majority opinion in Jones. It's not very surprising to see him dissenting in this particular case. But there you go, the majority on the court held that basically got to line these dominoes up, right? These Fourth Amendment decisions, one comes after the other. And if you've got a bad decision, then everything downstream of that is bad, right? You've got the whole concept of these Fourth Amendment decisions, they all have to be right, one down the line, one after another. Did they have the automobile exception? Yes. So, but what came before the use of the automobile exception? Well, they physically intruded on the curtilage, and that's a Fourth Amendment search. And so there has to either be a warrant or a JRE that covers it. The court rejected the concept that the automobile exception itself provides the ability to do that. So absent some other type of JRE, like exigent circumstances, that entry into the curtilage was unlawful, and therefore everything downstream of that is bad. And you end up with concepts of like fruit of the poisonous tree from that point on. So there you go. You hear it here first on Broadcast Blue. We give you the in-depth analysis of it. I want to thank you so much for joining me for this special Supreme Court edition of Broadcast Blue. I want to let you know that we've got all kinds of stuff going on our website. Please check it out. Our name is our website address. If you want to know how to get to Broadcast Blue, it's simple. www.broadcast.blue. That's actually an extension. There's actually domain names .blue now. And broadcast.blue, broadcast.blue is our website. You can listen to podcasts. All of the podcasts are on there. You get a link to our Vimeo channel, so you can watch Vimeo videos when there are some. Not every podcast has an associated video, but some of them do. And also information about upcoming webinars and other opportunities. And all on the website. It's absolutely free of charge. Check it out. And if you do enjoy the podcast, I would ask that you do two things. First, I would like for you to subscribe on either iTunes or Google Play. You can always listen to the podcast on the website itself, but it's better, and it's better for us if you subscribe with either iTunes or Google Play, and that you actually, if you like an episode, give us a like. Hit the buttons and give us a like for that. It means a lot to us, and I appreciate it, and it helps us to keep bringing these webinars and these podcasts and these videos all to you through the Broadcast Blue Network. Broadcast Blue is sponsored by Leah, LEA.ONE, Leah.1 for online training opportunities. If you have any training needs for the legal aspects of law enforcement, please check out the folks at Leah, LEA.ONE, Leah.1, Leah.1. Thanks so much again for joining me, and we hope to see you again here on the Broadcast Blue Network really soon.